This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Let's get to Jordan right now. By the way, it's 94 WIP HD1 Philadelphia as we broadcast away from the Tasty Cake Studio. We are at Borgata today. Love being here. Love having the Phils in first place in our final show in the month of May. Obviously, it's been a great month. Eagles with the OTAs this week. They will... soon 6 weeks off and then training camp. So there's a lot on the horizon. Let's talk to Jordan in Princeton. Jordan, good morning.
Good morning. How about them fighting, ladies and gentlemen? How about
pretty
them
good. Fightings? Pretty good job.
Pretty good. You know, Joe, you embody something I was taught very early in my sales career. And that's even if you don't know, say it with confidence and people will believe you. So I think you have a second career in sales coming your way if this radio thing doesn't work out for you.
Well, I appreciate that. I'm more interested in this industry, but thank you, sir.
You want to be right in the industry.
Whoa. Like well, yeah, but as far as opinions, I don't want to be right. I am right.
Mm. Well, isn't that truly the craziest fact of the day is that Joe DiCavra thinks he's always right when he's wrong most of the time?
That might be a winning
all right,
answer.
Jordan, give me one opinion that I have opined about in recent days that you think I was wrong about.
That we needed to go plunk a guy on the Braves to prove a point. Just beat them. You plunk a guy, great.
No,
if you plunk a guy, great. If you don't, you don't. We're going to beat them in the NL East, and if we see them in the playoffs, we're going to spank that little tight pants mustachioed man yet again. That's my belief about it. I was at the game yesterday, had a great day. These day games, I've told you guys this before, as a father and Little League and all kinds of life going on, day games are the salvation. Usually pretty easy. I don't put any calls on my calendar. I go down there yesterday. I pay $22 to get in. I find myself sitting behind the first base dugout right there at the staircase.
Wow.
And what happens to me? The broadcast picks me up. All of a sudden, I feel my phone in my pocket. I don't use my phone during a game. It's blowing out. Everybody I work with saw me on the broadcast.
Good man. Good man.
Right there in the front of the shot. And, Joe, just so you know, it was after they plunked Sosa, and I was pretty pissed off. I was pretty pissed off, and the broadcast caught me, and I was angry about it. But if you were going to pick one of two games to go to yesterday, I'm still glad I picked that one. I just hope that I don't get called into my partner's office at the end of the day.
It's like Seinfeld.
But I think I'm too important to get fired.
Okay.
But it was a good win. A really good win. It was actually one of the more entertaining baseball games I've seen in the last couple of years out of the Phillies. Just a good back and forth. You know, bullpen managed to hold it together. And listen, if I'm unemployed this time next week, I'll be able to go to more day games. So I guess that's a positive.
Well, I hear you. All right, Jordan, give me a great answer for what's crazy. You can win additional Phillies afternoon tickets.
So aside from that, there are 39 billion bacteria cells in our body and only 30 billion human cells. You are 2 to 3 pounds of bacteria, and it actually outnumbers the human cells in your body.
Wow.
Okay. All right.
Wow, so are we more bacteria than human?
It's kind of disconcerting.
Yeah. And I don't know how, some of these, I got to write something down. I just wrote bacteria cells. I mean, I don't know what to.
I think it's a good way to.
All right, so let me give you a theory, new theory. And I thought of this earlier, but haven't said it yet on the did Wheeler hit that guy on purpose thing. He did, but it was retaliation for Sosa being hit in game one. Your lower level player for my lower level player. And by the way, for you hitting Bryce, I'll get you the next time.
So my only, I think it's a good theory. It's a good theory.
Okay.
But, like, if the guy doesn't swing, he doesn't get hit. Are we all in agreement with that?
Not necessarily. But if he recognizes the pitch and steps back, I don't think he gets hit.
It depends what he does.
So if he just stands there and doesn't move,
he gets hit. Yes.
Okay.
Probably gets hit.
There we go. Yeah. So, yeah, maybe. It's a good theory.
You're nine-hole hitter for my nine-hole hitter.
Yeah, and I also wonder at that point they had hit multiple Phillies because they hit Trey.
Didn't Trey? Yeah, Trey got hit. I don't remember when in the game.
I think
game,
it was after the third, but
yeah.
So, and the Sosa thing was game one, and the Wheeler thing against that scrub Bray was game two. So
yeah, that's a good point.
By the way, you know what also struck me, and I guess I really get a little spun around on the lineup because they do change the lineup quite a bit. So I'm not sure how often lately this has been happening, but I was struck yesterday by Bryson Stott hitting eighth. So, like, some games he leads off?
Yeah. I don't think he would have been in the lineup if Harper were there. Like, if they didn't have to juggle and, you know, move Bohm to first and all that.
Maybe.
I think Sosa would have played for Stott.
Maybe. But here's...
Against Sale,
here's part
you know?
Of my point. It's just very unusual to hit a guy... To have a guy... Not hit. Have a guy who, like... 65% of the games, when it's a right-handed pitcher, is deemed the leadoff hitter.
Yeah.
And 35% of the games, like, if it's a left-handed pitcher, like, we're batting him eighth?
He hasn't been that great.
James,
for
James,
what it's worth.
James, correct.
Yeah.
Correct.
You know, we haven't talked about it because they're
correct.
Hitting, and the lineup's kind of worked when he's up there, but he has not been a reason for it.
I'm with you 1,000,000%. I think it's one of those things where sometimes people, it's like the Jalen thing. People act they win because of him.
Well, they do, and this is what you've gotten. This is what you've gotten.
See how I have full circle,
yeah,
boys and girls, aspiring broadcasters know this. Full circle radio someday.
Yeah,
just bring it.
Yeah, I just heard you yesterday. You were just dead wrong. Like, he is the most important player. He is
He is the most important. He's the quarterback.
Yes, which makes him.
But he's not the best.
But if they could only lose Saquon or Jalen, they would lose Saquon
in a second.
Jalen is harder to replace than Saquon.
All right, hold on. Let me think about this. Let me play this out. I'm trying to do this off the top of my head. So my options are Tanner McKee and Saquon.
Yes.
Or Jalen Hurts and what's that guy's name?
Will Shipley.
And Will Shipley. Oh, man. I think I'm going McKee and Barkley.
That's nonsense.
I'm being serious. I'm not trying to be a jokester.
I hate it.
That would be an interesting poll. I mean, people would be annoyed we put that poll up. But if you asked 100 Eagles fans, would you rather have Tanner McKee and Saquon or Jalen and Will Shipley, I'm telling you I'd rather have Tanner McKee
and Saquon. The Eagles would rather have Jalen Hurts.
I don't know about that.
They pay him the most. That's why quarterbacks make the most money.
I like Tanner McKee a lot as a prospect. We've gone a little far with the Tanner McKee thing. He's played like 30 snaps in the NFL. So while I get your point that the potential is there, you take the quarterback that you know you can win with over the running back. We talk so much about how Jalen...
Well, ordinarily, but this running back, for what it's worth, was third for MVP. This is not an ordinary running back.
But Jalen...
This is a guy beyond great. This was superhuman.
Jalen was also, though, in 2022, almost MVP, right? So,
yeah, that's right.
I just think we talk so much about how Jalen gets help, right? Jalen has great skill player, blah, blah, blah. Saquon also really, really benefits.
Absolutely.
So if you put Will Shipley in there, do I think he's getting 2,000 yards? No, I don't. But we saw Miles Sanders make a Pro Bowl. We saw DeAndre Swift. I think he made a Pro Bowl, if I'm not mistaken, or at least had a pretty good year.
He did, yeah.
So Jalen does the most important thing on the team, and that's that he takes care of the ball. Like, that is how they win. Jalen takes care of the ball. And so I don't think Tanner McKee would take care of the ball in the same way.
Are you struck when you bring up that Pro Bowl thing that Hurts didn't make it last year?
I think Jalen should have been in the MVP discussion.
I thought he was mediocre in the passing game for most of the year, played obviously great in the final two playoff games. Spectacular the whole year in the running game. Spectacular with regard to not turning. The best thing he did last year, other than the very end, was he just wasn't turning it over.
Yeah.
And that's a major accomplishment. I mean,
and it's the most important thing.
It is.
When this team wins the turnover battle, they win. If you told me, like Jalen, when he turns it over, they almost never lose when he takes care of
the
ball.
Well, let's play some audio that relates to Jalen, relates to A.J. Brown and the Eagles' offense. This was interesting. LeSean McCoy, I believe this was 2 days ago on television. A couple interesting things. We'll play it and then react. Here is Shady McCoy the other day talking about the present-day Birds.
They always have a new coordinator. Like Kellen Moore was a new coordinator.
Yeah. But that's what I'm saying. There's
not a lot of holes with
the Eagles. And the way he coached is like, way different from how they played this year. Yeah. If I say, like, A.J. told me, well, players tell me that the offense is really the offense.
No doubt.
They don't care who the corner is. You come over here to fit the Jalen Hurts offense.
All right. So, Elliot, what's your reaction?
Shady, well, buddy. First, yeah. Shady.
I think LeSean is awesome on TV for what it's worth.
He's pretty good.
But yeah, that was not
that
a great
really
slip
bad.
Up.
Yeah, I would have dumped it if it were radio. I'll tell you that much.
Yeah, AJ probably not thrilled with that. I think he's 100% correct. Like, and I think with every team, you build your offense around the quarterback. But if we want to take this a step further, like, we know, because Brandon Graham said it, that, you know, maybe Jalen and AJ weren't always on the same page last year. I think one thing we underestimate with, like, potential Jalen locker room issues is the offense they run is because of Jalen. Like,
oh, clearly.
Right? So if I'm a receiver and I'm not getting the ball, I know that part of that reason is because that's the offense Jalen wants to run. It's what he's best suited for. He makes the plays. He makes the calls at the line. He audibles. He checks. So when – and I mean, he seems to make it pretty clear. When A.J. Brown tells LeSean McCoy that the offense we run is because of Jalen, well, then when receivers are frustrated, who do you think they're frustrated
so,
with?
So, okay, I agree. But here's the way I would frame it. And I'm not trying to be a troublemaker. Every once in a while I'll jab at you guys, kind of joking. But you guys know what I think of Jalen. I think he's, you know, good but not great. He's sensational in the running game. Yeah. And I think not nearly in the passing game. I think he's mediocre in the passing game, to use a word. Here's what I would say. They clearly tailor the offense to the point that AJ privately told LeSean McCoy, who now LeSean McCoy, you know, has told the world, all right, AJ Brown's my source. Listen, to me, it's all about catering is the wrong word. It's all about tailoring the offense to Jalen's strengths and away from his weaknesses.
Yeah. But isn't that the case with any quarterback?
Yes. Yeah. Tom Brady wasn't running the right and the side because he wasn't a threat to run. Absolutely. So I think they – but I will say this. Part of making the offense – part of the negative is they don't pass it that often because he's not great in the passing game.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not just the type of plays they run. It's the frequency that they actually run. Because the coaching staff has determined, and I think rightfully so, and I think it helped them win a Super Bowl, we don't want this quarterback passing the ball 40 times a game.
And the other issue you run into, and I think this is where the frustration was last year, because I think it was the Panthers game, right? Panthers, then AJ said the passing game was struggling. Like, if you look at that Panthers game, AJ was open. And if you're a receiver and you get open on a passing play and the ball's supposed to come to you and it doesn't, like, I genuinely don't think they were mad Saquon carried it a ton. I think that receivers were frustrated at times because there were times where the passing play was called, they were open, and the ball was not thrown.
Absolutely agree.
And here's, and I'm curious for your perspective on this, Joe. Like, we don't know, and we're just guessing. But when AJ and LeSean had this discussion about the offense, what do you think the tone was? Do you think it was, no, LeSean, like, no, this is why it's okay the offense is built around, like, I would guess this was probably like, well, we just do what Jalen wants.
No, I don't think it's we do what Jalen wants. I think it was our coaches had devised a scheme to tailor to Jalen's strengths and away from his weaknesses. And I, as a player, am dealing with that.
That's what I'm like, okay.
Yeah, but that's different than it's what Jalen wants. It's what the coaches want based on what they think he's best at and avoiding what they think he's worst at.
Okay.
That's what I think AJ's expressing. Look, I was struck. We had Mike Quick, obviously, every fall on the show, and he was very clear a few years ago that – now, this may have eventually changed, but he was very clear when the Eagles were going back and forth between Jaws and Randall. There was a period for a year or two, like – and sometimes it was in the same game, sometimes it was in the same drive. Jaws or, you know, then Randall on third down. And Mike's point was he preferred Jaws – because he knew if he was open, Jaws would pass him the ball, whereas Randall was inclined to run.
Yeah.
And that was frustrating for Mike. And he expressed it on our show a couple years ago. And it was an interesting moment. And look, here's the thing I'll say. In defense of – and I don't know if A.J. Brown's a diva receiver. Sometimes people think he is. I think he's a great guy. I don't know if he's a diva. Here's what I'll say. One thing I'll say in defense of all diva receivers. I don't think people realize how frustrating it must be to do this. You play 70, let's say you play 70 snaps, you're wide receiver, you play 70 snaps. Let's just say 30 times you block, because that's normally the case for receivers. Let's say with this offense, it's like 40 times you block. So you're blocking guy like 50% of the plays or more, you're blocking guy. Then you're, you know, pass route running guy for roughly 30 to 40 plays. roughly. And there's only so many you get open.
Yeah.
And so when you have those, like, you know, six to nine that you're open, you want the ball because you're doing all that dirty work on all those other plays where you don't even have the chance to be open because you're pass blocking. Now you beat your guy and the quarterback doesn't get you the ball. I would imagine that's highly frustrating.
100%.
And that's how I felt watching the game. And I empathized with AJ. That's how. And by the way, I felt the same thing for Alshon. When you could tell Alshon was frustrated with Carson, that's what I felt. No, yeah. Jalen's better than Carson, but, like, you know, Carson's progressions just weren't there. And I think that's the thing with Jalen that to this point has been lacking. It's moving through the progressions quicker and pulling the trigger when the guy's open.
Well, and I, you know, we talk so much on the station, especially after what Brandon Graham said about Jalen and AJ's relationship.
Yeah, yeah.
And I just think, like, to the listener, to any of us, like, put yourself in AJ's shoes. Like, Jalen is his coworker, and the Jalen AJ's job is impacted by the job Jalen does, and he knows they run a certain system because of Jalen, and he knows it impacts his production because of Jalen. I just think it would be hard not to have some animosity toward, like, and I think that's for all quarterbacks,
especially,
right?
When Ja'Marr Chase doubles your catches.
Exactly, like
and, they're equal players.
Yes,
I don't
for
know,
sure.
Maybe yeah. One slightly better, but they're basically on the same line.
Yeah.
But, like, Ja'Marr Chase had double the catches.
Right. And
that's got to frustrate AJ. Bro.
Like, if whenever me and you did a show together, we had to do, let's say, 8-minute segments because that's what you preferred. But you're the GOAT. Like, you know, like, whatever, right?
Oh, yeah.
Like, well, that's what I'm saying. Like, you know, right? So there's just a reality of having a coworker where you have to do something a certain way because of that guy, where I don't know how you don't feel a level of animosity towards him. It doesn't mean you hate him.
By the way, ladies and gentlemen, we just found out Elliot's got animosity to me.
Well, we do regular segments.
What did I do to create animosity? All right. Well, good morning to you. Show to Cameron and John Ritchie. We got Devin here today. Seltzer with us. No John, no Rhea. They'll both be back next week. Both getting a little, I guess, 3-day weekend. Wonderful to be with you from Borgata, our home base, every single Friday. It's also going to be wonderful to talk to Rick Tocchet coming up in a few minutes. He'll join us at 8:30. Tocchet, of course, hired by the Flyers about 2 weeks ago. So we'll find out his mindset as he takes over a team that obviously, you know, he was once a prospect for and a damn good player for. Two different times. Tocchet, a player in the 80s, I believe in the very early 90s, and then back with the Flyers in the Lindros-LeClair era for a couple years. Part of that team in 2000 when they made that push to Game 7 in the Eastern Conference. Look, Tocchet's a legendary Flyer, and just a classic power forward in hockey who could do a little bit of everything. You know, he could hit, he could skate, he could score, he could pass.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
He could punch.
Hopefully he can coach.
Yeah, so we look for you. Exactly. Hopefully here he does a great job. Looking forward to it. All right, so Tocchet in about 10 minutes. By the way, one random thing from sports that stood out to me yesterday, and I've thought about this before, but I don't know if I've ever noticed it as much as I did last night with that Knicks-Pacers game. So just a really weird sports thing. I don't know if you guys have ever thought about this. So watching the game last night, and Knicks won, if you don't know, Knicks won. They won handily. They were in control the whole game. Game 6 this weekend in Indiana. But what am I getting at? I'm getting at the very odd reality, and it's the only sport that it exists with, of the main four, where there's a coach, and it's almost always, I think at this point, an assistant coach, that sits right next to a fan. Now, what am I getting at? There was a kid last night, Knicks fan, probably 6 years old. Elliot, he's sitting next to a Pacers coach.
Yeah.
The whole game, this, like, six-year-old is doing his thing, and he's next to, like, a 60-year-old man who's trying to coach the game. Now, he wasn't the head coach. No head coach is going to sit next to the, you know, the fan.
Right.
And now, maybe there's exceptions if it's the if the kid is the family of the owner, like Josh Harris and his family will sit right next to the Sixers bench. That's not this. This was like Nick fan guy.
Well, it happens.
That brought his family, and the 6-year-old is sitting next to the 60. It's so weird.
And
do they talk? Like no, at one, is there at one point like, hi, you're next to me. Hi,
how's it going? You know, like, I mean, it happens with players too. Like you see, like LeBron will, you know,
at the end of the bench. Yeah,
and it's interesting to that.
Very
point.
Odd, man.
Well, in hockey they're close, but in hockey there's the glass.
There's glass,
you know, so there's a difference. But yeah, I mean, even the players in general, like we don't think about it, but if you're inactive in the NBA and you're in the second row,
yeah,
you're like, you know,
totally.
You can really, really hear it, yeah, in what these guys are saying.
Look, at the end of the bench is also a weird dynamic, and a lot of times those are guys that aren't playing or have come out of the game for good. You know, sometimes. Now, sometimes guys will go sit down there and lounge out, maybe even stretch their bodies because they don't want to sit in the chair and they want to, you know, Larry Bird used to lie down there.
I mean, Embiid literally would do that stuff.
Embiid does do that.
They ride
you're
the
right.
bike sometimes.
Yeah. But, I mean, this kid's, like, getting up and down.
Yeah.
And I'm like, it's got to annoy the 60-year-old assistant. It's got to annoy him.
You ever think, like, I wonder if another team could purchase that seat and send somebody to almost, like, spy?
Also,
I do
just
I feel like there has you know what I mean? Like, wow. sort of like regulation on it, or like
they got
to
have
know.
Something.
Well, or also, they just don't say anything. That's that.
Well, you would think they would try to have some level of making sure who's in that seat is like
a 6-year-old. Don't coaches curse at players? Aren't they yell? Like, you know what I mean? Like that's a whole separate discussion.
Well, that's on his parents, I think.
I was just like, because look, maybe on the regular they grab whoever that person and that family is, and you know, before the game security, like, listen, you're here, but just know, like, zero tolerance.
Yeah, for sure.
Okay, but and maybe that message is said game by game. I don't know. I've never sat there. I have no clue. But, I mean, a 6-year-old's a 6-year-old.
You would think, and do you think, I should say, do you think, the NBA will ever change that?
Oh, they might.
Or it's too valuable. Well,
I hope
seats
not. I like
but
it.
You hear the players get really frustrated.
That's what I'm saying.
And a lot of nasty stuff is said to them.
Yeah,
so, anyway,
it only takes one incident.
Just struck me as just an odd part of sports that we never really talk about, but very weird last night. All right, 215-592-9494. Rick talking in about 5 minutes. Let's get to Lenny and Conchahokan. Good morning, Lenny.
Good morning. How are you?
Good, buddy.
So I love that the Jalen conversation happened right after you said something that you're wrong about, and I'm glad he is here for this.
Okay.
You are dead wrong. And, like, I'd like to make a few points and then hear yours and then come back.
Sure.
So, one, the definition of elite doesn't mean you have to do it by yourself and be Superman.
Of course.
Definition is too silly. The definition of elite is essentially you doing something that majority of your peers, meaning other quarterbacks, simply cannot do. And Jalen Hurts does that in the NFL. Right now, two things both can't be true with this. On this station and across this city, everybody was saying, Nick Sirianni should be fired. He's a moron. He's a buffoon. No quarterback, no team has won a Super Bowl with having a not great quarterback and a buffoon as a coach. So one of them has to give. Don't you agree with that?
Yes.
Right. So then Nick Sirianni, now you say, is a good coach? Is that what you're saying? And Jalen
I think Nick Sirianni is an outstanding coach. I think Nick's better at his job than Jalen is at his. I can't prove that, and I don't know it. That's just my instincts. I think Jalen's pretty good. I think, Lenny, my contention, and it's clearly been an off-season bone of contention, when a team wins the Super Bowl, not everybody, including the quarterback, not everybody's elite. Like, I would tell you this last year about Eagles players that I thought were really good, but not what I would refer to as elite. Devontae Smith. I wouldn't call him elite. I would call A.J. elite. To me, A.J. is at a higher level than Devontae. So is Jamar Chase. So is Justin Jefferson. Like, there is a top 7 wide receiver in football. I don't think Devontae's in that.
That's fair.
I think he's in the next 5 or so.
Yeah, I think he's a top 15.
Counterpoint, guy. I think Devontae Smith is one of the most, if not the most, underrated receivers.
I love him.
If you go back and look at some of his catches last season,
I know.
It's incredible.
This is no Devontae. Like, I can't imagine there's one Eagle fan that thinks he's better than AJ. Can we all agree with that?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Yeah.
And let's just say Devontae's the 10th best receiver in football. He's probably around there. At some point, you can't – not everybody's
elite. I get your
elite.
Point.
Like, yeah. Darius Slay last year, not elite. I would tell you Quinyon Mitchell, I think, was. So, you know, I put Jalen more in that, and I don't even think he's as good as Devontae and Darius Slay, but my point is not everybody is elite.
I just think the difference here is Jalen is far more involved in their success than the other players you're talking about.
He is.
Right.
That's true.
So, to me, that's the elite.
So, Lenny, what's your counterpoint? Go ahead.
So my counterpoint is, if you're talking about the other players, right, like you name the other players, if I name Joe Burrow, Lamar Jackson, and let's say Justin Herbert or whoever, their record against Patrick Mahomes is under 500. Jalen Hurts is 500. Jalen Hurts has been eliminated from the playoffs 2 out of 3 years, and you know two of the quarterbacks have eliminated him, Patrick Mahomes and Tom Brady. Like we're
but Lenny, here's quick counterpoint on your first point. That Josh Allen and Cincy guy Burrow thing, they've never had the number one defense. Like Jalen Hurts twice has had a top two defense. One time they missed number one by less than 1 yard. I mean, the 2022 Eagles had 70 sacks in a season, and the 2024 Eagles was probably one of the five best defenses this century. So when you say like Jalen has beaten Mahomes,
Lamar Jackson had
the
a top
team
defense.
Has beaten them.
Yeah, I mean Josh Allen, Lamar have had great defenses, and also
Lamar
for its worth, the only year that Joe Burrow went to the Super Bowl, the Bengals defense was sixth. And the other counter I'd give quickly is yes, the Eagles defense is awesome, but also Jalen helps the defense be better by taking care of the ball.
I agree,
not putting them in bad situations. Like I don't think it's coincidence when you look at great quarterbacks, they almost always have great defenses or at least good defenses because they play at such a high level. It makes the defense better.
Look, I agree with that, but here's the other thing I'll say, Lenny. We keep going back and forth, and this is good. This is good chatter, in my opinion. I think Jalen is more of a game manager. People hear that as a disrespect. I don't mean it as a disrespect. I think that Jalen manages the game in part, for instance, Elliot, knowing he had a great defense last year, so you can punt the ball,
100%.
Move the ball 50 yards down the field and say, hey, I'll give my defense a shot. They'll get me the ball back. We'll go get them the next time.
Yep, agreed.
And I think that's smart football.
Can I give you one point before you let me go?
Sure, and I got to get to Rick talking here because he's ready to rock, but give me your quick point and then give me your answer. What's crazy?
All right, so my quick point is he does something that no other quarterback in the NFL does right now except Lamar Jackson, and it penalizes him for his yards. Nobody can bleed out a 7 to 10 minute drive like the Philadelphia Eagles in the fourth quarter. So yeah. Joe Burrow's chasing points all the time. Lamar's chasing points.
He's a
all
big
the time.
Part of that. He is, Lenny.
So
he is.
So you can't penalize him for his passing numbers when we have a lead and he can just kill a fourth quarter.
All right, Lenny, you can win the Phillies tickets. What's crazy?
Tony Gwynn strikeout total. He struck out 424 times in a 20-year career.
It's unbelievable. He's right about that.
Really,
I mean, think about that. I mean, 420,
was that the number?
200 in a year. 424 in 20-year career.
Yeah. No, listen, Gwynn, I mean,
good.
There were guys from that era, in that era and before, Gwynn, Boggs, Carew.
Brett,
I mean,
those
Brett,
type of guys. Yeah.
I mean, just wild.
Robin Yount.
Robin Yount was another great one. All right, let's talk to Rick Tocchet, Flyers' new head coach, Rick Tocchet. Of course, got the job 2 weeks ago. It's a homecoming for him. And, I mean, I'm super psyched to have Rick Tocchet as the Flyers' head coach. First time he joins us since getting the job, and what a job it is. Rick Tocchet with us here on WIP. Good morning, Rick.
How are you guys? I don't mind talking Eagles. Talking
Let's about do it. Rick, what'd you make of that Super Bowl? Well, how about that?
I mean, it was a beatdown. Like, I mean, all year, just from afar watching the Eagles, just the way they progressed, it was just like a slow, like a juggernaut. I mean, and just obviously dismantling the Chiefs, obviously with Mahomes, you know, he obviously, you know, an incredible quarterback. I didn't think it was to be that big of a blowout, but it was incredible to watch.
It was something to behold. It really was. Rick, the Philadelphia thing. I mean, talking right there about the Eagles and watching the Super Bowl a couple months ago, has that Philadelphia thing stayed with you, you know, this whole time, really since the early '80s, mid '80s?
Yeah, I mean, listen, I've been gone quite a bit. Other organizations learned a lot, you know, as a player and a coach when you're away from this area. But coming back, it's just like so easy coming back, right? And it brings back memories back in the day playing for the Flyers and, you know, being friends with guys like Barkley and Schmidt and these guys, icons in the city, and the way the fans gravitate towards their sports team. There's not many cities like Philadelphia. You know, we got a lot of work to do. You know, I think we know that, you know, we're on the back page right now, and we got to start getting people to believe in the Flyers again. And, you know, I just want to be a part of it and a solution. And, you know, we got a lot of work, but I'm really excited about being back in the area.
Good. Well, Rick, a lot of people are very excited to have you here. So, of course, congratulations. What have the first 2 weeks been like for you? I mean, you can't coach a game yet, but you're in there, you're getting stuff done, you're talking to dudes. What's the first couple weeks been like for you?
Well, you know, obviously the game plan Jonesy and Danny got, Dan Hilferty really sold me on their game plan. You know, they got a ton of picks this draft, next year's draft, a lot of cap space next year, the year after. So there's some tools to work with. Obviously, the players here, I like the winger pool a lot. I mean, I know that there's some big defense I like there. Obviously, Sanheim is really, really progressive. I mean, I had him in Four Nations. When I was assistant coach for Canada. Really impressed the way he played in that with those type of players. In Konechny, I mean, you're talking about the star players representing the crest, Flyers crest. So there's some tools here. And like I said, you know, not a lot of people believe in this team for next year, obviously, because they think, the roster isn't that good. I disagree. I think there's a hardworking team. We're excited of progressing here.
Yeah, you mentioned maybe a lot of people currently don't believe in the team, but you know what it's like in this city when the Flyers are on the front page and not the back page, as you put it. You went to those Stanley Cups. You were with winning Flyers teams. I think the thing all Flyers fans feel is, like, how far away do you think this team can – or how far away is the team from getting back to what we all love, which is that Flyers hockey and back to winning?
Yeah, I think, first of all, my job is to create an identity. You know, who are the Flyers? You know, how do we play? Mm-hmm. Tough place to play when you come play us in our building, things like that, that back in the day the Flyers were always known for. And obviously develop players. I mean, I'm putting a staff together as we speak, assistant coaches, where the players come into the rink and I know it's the most, I hate using the word, I got to think of another word, but it's a process that I know I hate it. I mean, yeah. I've been actually trying to think of a new word other than process. But, you know, where players come in and they know that with the facility we have, with the knowledge we have, and with their buy-in, they can have a better sense of maximizing their talent and then obviously becoming a team. And that's my job. And that's what I'm going to be judged on. So I welcome that kind of challenge. So to answer your question, I don't know. I mean, we could be good this year. I don't know. I just think that the identity – where we're going every day, we got to work towards that.
So Rick here, and Rick talking with us on WIP, here's something you may or may not know as a sports fan over the last couple of years. So Nick Sirianni in year one didn't use the word process, or at least not in a way I remember, but he used a flower analogy, and City didn't like that. Team wasn't playing very well at that moment, and he was talking about blooming. You know, essentially it takes time to bloom.
Sure.
And then he switched to year two to a mountain analogy, because he realized, all right, flower doesn't work in Philly, so let's scale a mountain. So anyway, I'm just saying, you know, maybe you can figure out an analogy that works of some sort. Rick, how good do you think Mishkov can become? I mean, when he joined the big club last year, it was probably the most exciting prospect to join the big club probably since Lindros. How good can he become?
Yeah, there's a lot of talent there. Talking to Jonesy and Danny, I don't know the kid that well. I will get to know him. He loves the way Kucherov. He wants to be. That's his kind of his hero, Kucherov. If he can somehow, and the way he handles the puck, the way he can see the game. He can see the game before anybody sees the play, which is Kucherov-ish like. That's a pretty good goal to have, because I think Kucherov's one of the. It could be. He is a top three player. I don't want to put pressure on the kid, but if he can somehow, and you got to remember, Kucherov, I think, had like 30 points his first year, and Mishkov here, what did he have, 60-something points his first year. So, like I said, I don't want to put pressure on him, but that's a goal, the way Kucherov plays. I think I see a little bit there with the skills, the puck skills, and his hockey brain, offensive hockey brain. So I see that kind of comparison.
You know, we know you so well as a player, and obviously you've coached in the NHL, but not here in Philadelphia. As a coach, when you try to build the Flyers, right, do you look around the league? I mean, you look at Florida, they've been to three straight Stanley Cups, yeah. They're back in it this year. As you try to build the Flyers, do you build them in, okay, this is how I want them to play, or do you look at teams around the league and say, this is who we need to beat, and here's how we beat them?
Yeah, it's a great question. I think in hockey, I love the other sports, but hockey, is a little bit of a copycat league. So if you look at the Florida Panthers, you know, they've gone to the final. It'll be the third time they've gone to the finals. Obviously, so teams are looking, what are they doing? And if you look at their team, tough team to play against, they made a bold trade to get Tkachuk, was a huge trade for them. Mm-hmm. They hit on, I mean, the Zito, Bill Zito, their GM, hit on about three unreal trades, getting Bennett and Reinhardt for basically not a lot. They've hit a couple of free agents, and they had some really good, obviously Barkov draft picks, Lundell. There were big draft picks for them. I do like the way they play. I like the way that they don't care who they play. They play the same way, and I think that's the important part, is creating that identity. So a tough team to play against, relentless pressure, and when they're on their game, their defense. And I'm big with that. I think you got to be a smoldering defense, play without the puck, protect the goalie, and then obviously when there's chances to go, you go and create.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average, and auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Kind of my style. I mean, the Florida Panthers type of style. It's like I said, they're successful. It's what, like I said, 3 years in a row at the finals.
Yeah, for sure. Hey, Rick, let's talk about style of coaching. So you played... here for Mike Keenan. For those on the younger side, if you don't know, I mean, Mike was driving a hard bargain. Someone that I know told me that he knows you well said your style of play doesn't necessarily like I perceived you as an incredibly tough player, and I've been told by a few people that you used the term partnership in your press conference, that it's not nearly the Mike Keenan style. How would you describe your style of being the leader, but also encouraging others without maybe pushing them to the nth degree to get it done?
I believe in the partnership nowadays. I believe that you have to explain, educate players, tell them reasons why, even the way, hey, we're going to practice at this time, and we're doing this, and we're traveling at this time, and the day off will be here. I think you have to explain and educate this generation. I think the players appreciate that. So that's one of the things I'm going to try to do. I like to communicate. I have a little bit of a head start over guys that haven't played. I'm not saying you can't be a great coach if you never played NHL, but I've played every seat. I've been on the fourth line. I've been on the first line. I've played in some pressure games. I've also sat out games, healthy scratch nearly the end of my career. So I kind of know everybody's role. So talking to certain players, there's an experience that I've been in their shoes before. But I think the honesty and the communication with the player is huge. And I think that's something I've really, really paid attention to the last bunch of years. It's helped me be a better coach. And I think picking your staff, your assistants, sometimes you have to pick a guy that might be better at something than you. You can't be afraid as a head coach to get a guy. There might be an assistant coach out there that is better at me at something, and I welcome that. So those are the sort of things I think to be a good head coach, and you have to evolve every year. You can't be the same coach every year. You got to give players fresh ideas every year, and not be afraid to listen. And outside the box thinking, I think that's huge too. You can't always do the same thing, so you just try to evolve as a coach and with today's player.
One thing that strikes me listening is you really emphasized, working with people, the relationships. It's no secret that the Flyers certainly have a lot of former Flyers right now in major roles, right? What do you view? Because sometimes that can be viewed as a criticism. But what do you view as a positive of the fact that the people you're working with have been here? You know them. They know the city. Like how? What are your early impressions of that?
Yeah, I mean, there's going to be detractors. I mean, and anywhere you go, hiring an old Flyer against stuff. I understand that to a point. But the old Flyers were successful, and I'm not saying that that automatically makes me know everything now. But I've been gone for 25 years or 28 years. You know, I've been in other organizations. I've won a couple of cups with Pittsburgh as a player and assistant coach. So I've been you know, other places, and so it's not like, you know, like here's another old Flyer. And I'm proud to be an old Flyer. I'm proud to see Billy Barber and Bobby Clark around the rink yesterday and talking to them. I'm proud of those guys. You know, they helped shape my career as a kid. You know, I was 19 coming over the Walt Whitman Bridge, you know, not knowing what Philadelphia, what kind of city was. I was scared to death. And this organization helped me become a man and really helped be a family with Mr. Snyder. And I see the same thing here, you know, with Jonesy and Danny and Dan Hilferty and Brian Roberts. I mean, they're it's a family kind of atmosphere. I can tell. So, I mean, I'm looking forward to the challenge. I mean, listen, my when I went to Vancouver my first year, as I said, we want to meet pressure with pressure. So there's pressure here, and we want to meet it. I mean, you can't hide from pressure. Go find it. Same thing on the ice. If the pressure's there, go find it. Don't hide. So that's what we got to do.
No question. Rick, final thing here. You know, you referenced Ed Snyder. Have you reflected in the last couple of weeks of how proud he would be of you becoming the Flyers head coach?
Yeah, sure, of course. I mean, you know, like I said, it shaped who I was. I mean, Mr. Snyder and the Flyers. And coming back here, just for the 2-3 weeks, you know, talking to Danny and Dan Hilferty and Joseph, I keep saying those guys because it is what they want to create here is something special, and it reminds me of back in the day. And obviously they want to do their own thing, but there is that family, you know, atmosphere, and I think the players feed off that stuff. So, yeah, I think he'd be proud, and you know, like I wish I was here to thank him for you know, what he's done for me.
Yeah. Well, Rick, we wish you obviously the absolute best of luck. Town's behind you. I will say, obviously, the town has been incredibly frustrated, you know, in recent years because it's been a long time.
Sure.
Been a long time. But people are, you know, certainly very excited and hopeful for better days. And we wish you the absolute best of luck and look forward to talking to you from time to time. Good luck in the preparation for the season. And we'll talk to you when it gets closer. Thank you, Rick. Stay well and good luck, bud.
Thanks, guys. Thanks for the support.
Yep, thank you.
You got it. There he is, the head coach of the Flyers, Rick Tocchet. Good stuff right there. All right. So, look, I mean, he sounds dialed in, man.
Yeah.
Dialed in. Right, James, your impressions. What do you make?
I loved it. Like, again, you know, we'll see what happens with the Flyers, but I think he has the right mentality. He sounded fine. Even when I answered the phone, like, off the air, I was like, hey, Rick, you know, going to have me a W. He's like, awesome, man. Really excited to go. You know, thanks for it. Like, he was pumped to even talk, you know. Good. So I thought that was a really good interview.
One thing about the hire is it does get them more attention than if it was a nondescript guy. You know, I mean, it's just,
sure.
That's a fact. It creates more buzz. And I think they're wise to, you know, generate that buzz. Now, ultimately, you want to find the right person. That matters most. Look, I love Tocchet as a player. I'm very hopeful for him as the coach here of the Flyers. I think we all know the main thing is not who the coach is. It's who the players are. I mean, it just is. Mm-hmm. They need better players, period. They need better players. I'm on one hand, there's nowhere to go but up. But on the other hand, you can say for the last 10 years, there's been nowhere to go but up. And they've, other than 2020, they stayed in the same spot for 10 years.
Yeah, what really struck me about him is, and, you know, I get to see Nick up close at the NovaCare, how he builds a culture. I was really impressed and I think encouraged by how he talked about the family part.
Sirianni or Tocchet?
Well, Tocchet right there, because it reminded me of Sirianni.
It reminded me of Sirianni.
Yeah. Like,
I thought the same thing.
And I thought his answer about the former Flyers kind of building a family environment, like, we can all hate the former Flyer thing. That's the best explanation I've ever heard of it. So we'll see if, you know, I get it, the players, the coaching style, the X's and O's, all that. To me, he sounded like somebody that can build a winning environment with the Flyers.
Well,
they have great players,
thing,
but I was impressed.
One other thing that I thought was really good is when he said that, when you asked him a question about what type of coach he was, did you notice he said nowadays when he talked about it?
Yes.
That shows me someone who's willing to adapt and change and get with the times and what works now. I thought that was impressive.
So I'll bring it back to Sirianni, James, one more time on that point. To me, one of the things that impresses me the most about Sirianni is I think he's a blend of old school and new school. I think he's old school in that there's accountability. There is accountability.
And toughness.
I mean, like Devin White didn't get the job last year just because he was Devin White.
Which is ironic because he had a text thread called accountability.
No, and Bryce
all-time backfire
right,
and
Bryce Huff didn't get the job just because he was $50 million guy. Like he was on the team, but he wasn't playing. So accountability is a big part of Sirianni, but so too is the newfangled stuff, connectivity, all that stuff. You know, like, and I would recommend a lot of coaches emulate what Sirianni does. I think he's blended it really well. Let's get your reaction to that. Obviously, the Phillies went in 2-3 against the Braves. They lose the last one there yesterday. It was a series that had a little bit of everything. We'll remind you of the Twitter poll question of the day, which is brought to us by Armin Chevrolet. Let your journey begin in the completely redesigned 2025 Equinox from Armin Chevrolet. Together, let's drive. Visit ArminChevy.com. Poll question, do you think Zach Wheeler was retaliating when he hit Nick Allen yesterday, yes or no? You know, the thing I'll say, the guy in recent years that really disappointed me the most as a Philadelphia coach, like by far, was Girardi.
Same, dude.
Because Girardi was wired as a player the way Rick Tocchet was wired as a player. Tough.
So
and was known for blending the new school stuff. And I mean, James, I just thought he was lame.
He was so lame. He was soft. Honestly, it felt like he just didn't even care half the time. It felt like in his post-game, probably like,
He was a huge disappointment.
Honestly, Joe, I'm with you. Honestly, probably the single biggest disappointing coaching hire of my lifetime. Like Chip Kelly, in a way, because we were all in on Chip. Yeah. But Girardi just wasn't what I expect him to be in any way, shape, or form.
And what you just said right there about the Girardi not caring, I 100% agree. He was not invested. I think what came across there too, Rick Tocchet, at the very least, super cares.
Totally.
And I think that's an underrated Nick Sirianni quality, is that Nick, like, eats, sleeps, and breathes football, just like Jalen. And when Joe Girardi was here, I don't think he really cared if the Phillies won. Rick Tocchet came across as someone that really, really wants the Flyers to win, and I think that matters.
Your reaction on all this. Let's talk to Drew in Westchester. How you been, Drew?
Joe, good to talk to you. Morning, folks. I'm going a little back here. You weren't working at this point, but I called in during the Bird Town Hall, and I was told people were clapping for me. Now, do you
love
think
it.
They were clapping because of beat the hammer prowess, or you know, do you think that could have played a part there?
I just think people love you, Drew. You're you know, a lovable,
and
smart guy.
I do think that people love that you beat the hammer. Yes, without a doubt.
Thank you, Elliot. I appreciate it.
You get that out of your system? We done with the nonsense?
Man, Joe just can't handle this right now.
Take a knock down. It's good.
I mean, Joe, I don't get to talk to you that often.
No, I'm playing around. It's always good to hear from you.
I had to get equipped, man. With the Phillies, they're obviously having a better season than I think we expected. I just think, you know, this bullpen to me just still kind of feels like an elephant, like boogeyman in the room a little bit. Like they were a couple feet away from being swept out of that doubleheader yesterday, if that's a home run in the first game. Like I looked at it this morning, like Strom, Kirkering, Romano, like they're all pacing to go over their like career high in innings. So I don't think they need one guy. Like I think Dombrowski has to go out and get two or three guys. So I don't know. That's still just a big concern of mine.
Well, I'll say it, Drew. Look, I agree with you. It's a concern. It's not as big a concern for me as others because I am still convinced they'll slide at least one, if not two starters into the bullpen in October. So I see that through a different prism. Now, what's come up today on the show, and I think it's a smart point that's been brought up by a couple callers, is you don't want to burn out your best relievers before you get to the playoffs. And they do run a risk if they keep going to these three guys over and over and over again of doing that. I will tell you, I am convinced that they burned out Craig Kimbrel in 23.
I agree.
Was an all-star. I mean, he was outstanding. Now, you can make the case he was getting near the end of his career, and maybe it was inevitable, maybe. Or maybe they just overcooked him in June, July, August, and September, and he didn't have anything left in October. And so, you know, we as a fan base may need to know that until they make a trade, or unless they make a trade, we may have to accept, you know, a lesser in the eighth inning sometimes, and you're going to lose that game from time to time to preserve the three main guys. Because you can't cook them. I mean, I'd rather they lose I'd rather they lose four extra games than cook their three main relievers.
Yeah, I agree there. I mean, it better be until with a trade and not unless.
They did make a move yesterday for a guy that they immediately shipped to the minor leagues. James, what do we know about this guy?
He's a career minor leaguer. He's a 30-year-old, has only been, you know, made it to the majors a few times. He's got like a 6.5 career RA.
So it's a flyer.
And not a great flyer.
Sounds exciting.
Okay. But I'll say this. It sounds like they're at least trying. And I'm not saying give them credit or don't. I'm just saying it sounds like they are trying to do something to maybe see if that guy can pitch well enough to get up here. I mean, I guess, because they traded him for cash. So they traded him for nothing, essentially.
Yeah. But it doesn't sound like it's a great
No,
flyer.
It doesn't sound like he's a solution. Drew, give
not me, a Rick Tocchet flyer.
Give me an answer for what's crazy, Drew.
Yeah, I feel like we'll probably never see this again with the DH rule. How about when career 100 hitter Joe Blanton came up in the World Series blasted a home run for the Phillies?
So that's a good answer. All right, let me ask you guys a question. I saw last night, somewhere on social media, top five home runs by the Phillies this century.
Ooh.
All right, now hold on. Let me.
It's not by length. You're saying like
moment.
Right. Okay. Yeah.
All right. So because the Blanton homer was not one of the five. Now let me write them down. Matter of fact, let me write them down. I got to do this off my head, but I'll get them. Let me get it. We'll find out if you guys can come up with the right answer.
No cheating.
And we'll see.
No,
well, top five. Now, this is some random guy on social media. I don't know who it was, but top five that this guy determined, and we'll get that and see if people get it right.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.